Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. Theresa May has just emerged from Prime Minister's Questions, where Jeremy Corbyn took her to task over her catastrophic mishandling of the Windrush deportations. I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by Katie Bowles and Isabel Hardman to discuss. So, Isabel, you couldn't get a more embarrassing situation for the government here. Not only is Theresa May Prime Minister, but she was Home Secretary when the Home Office was basically instructed to go after people who've been here for 10, 20, 30 years and to start to ask them for papers, some of which the Home Office itself might have destroyed. So did Jeremy Corbyn make the most of this opportunity?
Well, he did in a sense. I mean, it was quite an open goal for him, and this would have been a much bigger row had Parliament not been dominated by the debates on Syria over the past few days. So it was definitely the right decision for him to lead on Windrush and try to develop the row. His questions were good. He asked about whether the Prime Minister blamed herself or the Home Secretary. He raised the question of a case that he'd previously spoken about at PMQs a few weeks ago, of a man called Albert Thompson who'd been denied access to NHS treatment as a result of this policy. And he attacked the government's hostile environment policy on immigration, which I think tactically is really important. But
wait, let's say a bit more. The hostile environment policy was a policy from Theresa May as Home Secretary, saying that the general tone of their handling of immigration cases ought to be so that it sets a hostile policy for illegal immigrants. In other words, to make life deliberately difficult for those they're dealing with.
And to make life deliberately difficult for those without papers. And unfortunately, that means it does not distinguish between those who are genuinely here illegally and those who are genuinely here legally, but just haven't got the documentation because they didn't think they needed it and because they came to Britain in 1950, for instance. And, you know, people do tend to shred things after about 10 years. Anyway, so Theresa May did actually come out of this session surprisingly well. I was quite shocked that she did, given what a monumental row this is. She was quite confident because it was her home turf. It's a policy she really believes in. I think she's probably one of the only people left in government who actually does believe in it.
But what kind of defence is there for this policy?
Well, she was basically focusing on the importance of finding illegal immigrants, and she apologised for the mistake, as she called it, that had been made. She also had what really sort of changed the game, actually, at PMQs, was she had a very good riposte to, I think it was Corbyn's third question, when he asked about the decision by the Home Office to destroy the landing cards of the Windrush generation. Now, Theresa May had found out this fact that she was clearly very excited about, which was that actually the decision to destroy the landing cards had been taken by the Labour government in 2009. It was just implemented by the Tories. And there was a bit of a lengthy ding-dong between the two leaders about that, which I think then weakened Corbyn's case a bit.
And it's funny, Katie, because only yesterday the Prime Minister's spokesman was saying, oh, this wasn't due to any politician, it was simply the immigration agency that took this decision, trying to blame it on the Quango. Now Theresa May has found that she can blame it on a politician. But really, it's difficult for her to walk away. So how could she get out of this mess? I mean, sure, she can parry a couple of blows from Corbyn, but really, it's her fingerprints are over the problem.
Yeah, and it's worth noting that although she kind of hit back at the zinger with this new fact, that since then there has been some dispute over whether it really is the Labour government or if it is down to, you know, the special task force. So I don't think it's a clear win from her on that.
Also, what are her backbenchers thinking about this? Because a lot of the voices we've heard condemning this policy have been those of Conservative MPs.
Yeah, but I think the Conservative Party as a whole basically wants to be as far away from this row as possible, but it's impossible to do that. I think what's interesting is the whole response from Number 10 this week has been a bit like, oh, okay, well, now we know it's a problem. Don't worry, we're going to fix the whole thing. And that's the same with the Home Office. But these reports, you know, they're not new. We've been hearing about Windrush stories, you know, for some time now. There's one journalist at The Guardian, Amelia Gentleman, who has been doing a lot on this. And Number 10 have come back to the initial story saying that they had declined to offer a meeting with Commonwealth leaders to discuss the problem.
And that's why it's blown up this week. Because that's the strange thing about this. Millie Gentleman at The Guardian has been writing about this for years. So why should now it become a political issue on Monday?
I think the timing of the Commonwealth celebrations meant that it was all of a sudden more timely news story than it ever been, so it's getting a lot of attention. I think that a lot of Tory MPs just saw red and were like, we're not going to put up with, you know, the government being so slack on this. Mm-hmm. And it meant you immediately saw backbench MPs. So you had people who are quite vocal, like Tom Tugendhat. You know, he had a piece in the Monday Standard as soon as this started to break, before any concessions had been made.
What?
Basically saying that it was a shame and it needed to be fixed. Mm-hmm. Then you had people like Sajid Javid, so people mm-hmm. in the cabinet, going out on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And obviously there was a question there as to, did that authorization come from Number 10, or are these people really just now getting to the point where they are just saying, we're just going to say it until the Number 10 acts? And since then, I do think the outrage has been so palpable and so across the board. You know, the Daily Mail, Theresa May's normally like greatest cheerleader, has for 2 days in a row had horrific front pages about the mistakes made, that I just don't think they can ignore it. And now they're very keen to say, well, we're fixing it, we're sorry. But it does just feel like they've been pushed into it rather than, you know, they suddenly realise there might be a bit of an issue here.
We also had quite a striking question from the leader of the SNP at Prime Minister's Question Time. Here it is.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Does the Prime Minister agree with her Secretary of State, who's just sitting along from her, that the rape clause provides victims with double support?
That was Ian Blackford. Now, Isabel, rape clause is something that Scottish politicians hear an awful lot about. The SNP have been using it time and time again to describe the policy where the government will pay for, you know, two children out of child benefit, but not the third, unless that third child is the product of rape. Why is it that this UK-wide policy has been dominating Scottish headlines for years, but until today, we'd hardly heard about it in Westminster?
Well, I think it's partly because it was the SNP who picked up on it as an ongoing problem. So it was SNP MP Alison Thewlis who started a campaign on this and who was raising it week after week, every opportunity she got, basically, PMQs, DWP questions and so on. And she started a big campaign. I think also the confusion in the Labour Party over what to do about the package of welfare reforms that this was contained in, which came up during the Labour leadership contest when Harriet Harman was interim leader. And actually the decision to, I think it was to abstain initially on that welfare reform bill during the Labour leadership contest, was one of the things that electrified the fight between Jeremy Corbyn and the others.
Because at the time, welfare reform was hugely popular. And a members' poll showed it was one of the most popular things that the coalition government had ever done. So David Cameron was almost defying Labour, saying, I dare you to vote against this. So that they'd probably caved, but in doing so, they'd effectively have supported what is now known as the rape clause. So giving the SNP a chance to biff, I suppose, both Labour and the Tories. But Katie, Labour seem to now be finally breaking from this policy.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the time, and even today, you find Jeremy Corbyn going on an attack on something and the Tories very quickly turning around saying, oh, but actually a Labour government supported this. But to be fair, a Jeremy Corbyn government would be like no other Labour government. On the rape clause, they have said that they would, you know, they would scrap that. I don't think that's hugely surprising, given that it's Jeremy Corbyn and he was opposed to the initial welfare reform.
He probably voted against it.
In the first place, exactly. And actually, the actions taken by Harriet Harman as interim leader was part of what pushed the left of the Labour Party into even going down the route that they did.
So this might suit Corbyn's agenda as well, though. The rape clause is a demonstration not just of the blackness of Tory hearts, but of how corrupt the Labour project was before the Corbynistas came to save it.
Exactly, and I think the Conservatives have the issue, which is Esther McVeigh's language this week was pretty appalling, and it will really play into the hands of people who want to depict the Conservatives as a nasty party. Theresa May did use less clumsy language when she responded to this, pointing out that if you do tick that box, you're not just seeing a general, you know, person who deals with these forms, it will be a specialist. But I think given how the government have handled recent events, I don't think there is supreme confidence in their abilities.
And Isabel, Ian Blackford was waving a form in the House of Commons. That form has rather special significance.
So this is the form that women who have a third child conceived as a result of rape have to fill in to say that they were raped. And he said, this is the form they have to fill in. It has a box for the child's name in it. And he said this was a disgrace. And the reason that he cited the box for the child's name is that a lot of women don't disclose to anyone that they've been raped. Some of them may have been raped within marriage by abusive partners, by abusive spouses who are using pregnancy as a means of controlling them. So this would be a massive thing for a woman to have to do, not only to talk about an experience that she's probably tried to bury for many years, but to also put the name of her child who was conceived as a result of rape on a form. And as Katie said, actually, the government can't really be trusted with people's documents. People's personal information does regularly get lost or stolen or destroyed, which would probably be the best thing for these forms in the circumstances. But what a traumatic experience for a woman to have to relive the rape, to have to try to convince the government rather than a court of law or the police that she's been raped, just in order to receive her tax credits.
So Katie, yet again, like the Windrush example, we see an example of bureaucracy triumphing over humanity. This is, David Cameron would speak about a post-bureaucratic age. Now this seems to be a kind of Maybot age where bureaucracy rules supreme. So this could add up to quite a big vulnerability for the Tories. You can see the Labour Party saying, look, the Tories are so uncaring, they care about the machine, this is like their tone deafness, this is like the poll tax all over again, it makes sense in theory, they can't see the people. So I wonder if that's why the other cabinet members, in a way, kind of rose up against the Prime Minister this week and demanded that she change her position on Windrush, because they can see this kind of Maybot inflexibility becoming a major liability for the party.
I think that is what's happening to some degree. And I think Amber Rudd, who is in a fairly impossible situation in the sense that she is instilling May's policies, May is now her direct boss, and she can't really blame her predecessor, given her predecessor boss, did actually get close to hinting at this in the chamber this week when she talked about the problems of Windrush, and she said, I do sometimes worry that the Home Office has gotten to the way of thinking about, you know, policy and pure numbers and lose sight of the person.
Of course, and that will be speaking to the culture which Theresa May herself will have created.
Yeah, and I think the only positive you can really take from how events have unfolded this week is that there is a very conscious effort that that should no longer be the way forward. And I think the cabinet ministers are getting a little bit more courageous, could be the word, or just, you know, competent in speaking up about this.
Katie and Isabel, thanks very much indeed. You can subscribe to this podcast, Coffee House Shots, on the iTunes store, and do rate and review it if you can spare a few minutes. We'd love to hear from you.